Conas Satoshi of Galair, and welcome to the Linux Lads. As you've probably noticed, I'm not Shane, so Shane is off sunning himself somewhere down in Wexford, which isn't very sunny. But so today I will be your host. I'm Connor. And we're joined quite graciously by Artyom Zorn. Hello, Artyom.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show.
So I'll start the show by going through the ad read. So the ad read this episode is for the Debian project. Debian, it's also known as Debian GNU / Linux, is a distribution composed of free open source software developed by the community-supported Debian project. It was established by Ian Murdoch in the 16th of August 1993. Its first version was released in the 15th of September 1993, and the first stable edition was released on the 17th of June 1996. The Debian stable branch is the most popular edition for personal computers and servers, and is the basis for many other distributions. You would not have projects such as Ubuntu, PopOS, Linux Mint, Elementary OS, MX Linux, and of course, Zorin OS, without the hard work of the Debian developers. So go to debian.org/donations to donate in any way that you can. This can be time, money, or they even accept old equipment. So, Mike, what have you been up to?
Well, over the last 2 weeks, last week I was traveling. I did what I call my half of my annual pilgrimage. That means my journey to the east to see my family. I went to Prague, Vienna, and then we were visiting friends in Zurich. I actually went to have a very nice meal in the Google campus because a friend works in there. Very, very nice meal. Very nice.
Ooh, fancy.
Very nice campus, yeah. And so I've been all over the place. Hopefully I didn't catch anything nasty. So I'm
quite a timely joke there.
Yeah, I know. And I'm back to Dublin and back to work. So everything's going back to normal.
And normally we rotate, and of course in the spot where I say for Shane's, I'm like, Mike was traveling, Shane is traveling, and that's the reason why he's not here. But so for me, what I've been up to is as of only a couple of days ago, I did a complete clean install and installed Manjaro Cinnamon Edition, and I'm actually really liking it. I'm also considering getting a widescreen monitor, because at the moment I have one small 23-inch monitor, and then a hand-me-down 14-inch Dell monitor that like has VGA cable out the back, like ancient thing that's been handed me down from a couple of desktops ago, and that's my second monitor. And I'm thinking a wide monitor would pretty much take the role of both of them, and they're actually coming down at quite reasonable prices. I'm about 200 sterling or 300 sterling, that price range on amazon.co.uk. you can get kind of LG, Samsung monitors, kind of reputable brand widescreen monitors. So if they're that reasonably priced, I actually might consider getting one. So that's the things that I've been up to.
Anything interesting you've been up to, Artyom, in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, so mainly just been working on the new 15.2 release of Zorin OS, which we're about to launch tomorrow. So that's basically been the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's well, tomorrow. So that's quite a timely thing that you've been on this episode. So looks to be, you're kind enough to share a little teaser of the show, of the release notes to us here. So I'm looking through them. You've support for the new AMD graphics cards, and you say the Intel 10th generation processors. Is this things that you've been doing yourself, or is this because you inherit the latest kernel and it's inbuilt into the little kernel, or into the kernel, or is it a bit of both?
It's mainly the new kernel release that you know, the Linux kernel developers have put out over the past few months, as well as Ubuntu has been porting it over to the 18.04 base, which ZorNOS 15 is based on as part of the hardware enablement stack. So we're inheriting all of the great features and work that these two teams have been doing. So big kudos to them for all the work.
Yeah, yeah, fair play to the upstream developers. No, the only reason I brought that up is because you seem to be highlighting Intel here, and I was thinking, is there anything special about Intel? Like, is there any support for AMD Ryzen, like, or the Threadripper? but I'm guessing if you're inheriting the hardware enablement stack from the Ubuntu developers, all of that is just inheriting it. You get all the AMD goodness as well.
Yeah, it's important to have it preloaded in the operating system from the get-go, so that people with that hardware can easily install it without any messy setup. So that's why we do these incremental point releases every couple months or so.
That makes sense. I also see that you have support for the newer MacBook and MacBook Pro keyboards and touchpads. So those of you who have a MacBook and are sick of macOS, then slap ZorNOS on that bad boy.
And in the process, get a better keyboard.
Yeah, yeah. Or just get a ThinkPad and you'll automatically get a better keyboard. So we'll do a bit of news. Mike, you put in that Facebook are now one of the major sponsors of OBS.
Yeah, so I mean, it seems like every episode we release there is a major sponsorship announcement for the likes of OBS Blender or you know, all of these high profiles open source project, and obviously the more the merrier. And I just have to say that I'm really glad to see Facebook being in the news for something else than privacy breaches and being nasty. And I'm really glad that OBS, which is a project that I used to do a backup recording of this podcast, and it's I'm barely scratching surface of it, what it can actually do, but it's amazing, and it's used from, you know, hobbyists all the way to professionals, and this will help them. This is, I think, to the tune of $50,000 a year, if I'm, or at least if I remember correctly. And it's great that such an amazing project is going to be supported.
Yeah, I think they have a certain sponsorship levels of the project, and Facebook are coming in at this at the 50,000 level, which is their diamond tier. I do not know if just reading through the article here. Yeah, it does appear that this is their top level tier. So I was just wondering if they had a higher up tier, but no, the 50,000 seems to be their top level tier. So it's a minimum of 50,000. Needless to say, Facebook could be sending more money their way, but we don't know, as it's a minimum of 50,000. But fair play to them, and as you say, it's some bit of positive news. In a very long string of negative news for Facebook. And they're not beholden to this sponsorship. There are other people who are in the same tier. So it's not the case of Facebook are now calling the shots and saying, we're giving you 50,000 a year, therefore you must make these specific changes and we need to be overbearing or something like that. It's good that they're now being independent, and so that's good. So in the next bit of news, LibreOffice 6.4.1 is released with over 120 bug fixes. LibreOffice is a fantastic project. It's taking over from the old OpenOffice, which many people, it turns out, actually still think of. Those people who are non-tech savvy out there, when they think of it just has the brand recognition. So, but LibreOffice is by far the better project, in my opinion. So it's good to give them the shout out. It's a fantastic project. I use it on all of my Linux distributions, and slowly but surely I'm kind of injecting a bit of free software onto my dad's computer. He's running Windows 10, but he has Firefox, he has LibreOffice, he has VLC, and Firefox. In fact, when he got a new computer, he says, "Connor, can you put that Mozilla on my computer?" I went, "I shall do." So that's good. Mike, any thoughts on this release?
Well, I haven't tried it yet. I think, although being on a rolling distribution, I think I'm not far off. But I use LibreOffice mostly Calc every day at work because it's just the office suite, and I think I've been quite public on this show about my preferences for visit data for the most comma separated values and that kind of thing. But if you need something a bit more fancy, maybe with some reporting capabilities, then definitely LibreOffice does what I needed to do. RTM, is LibreOffice default on is it the default office suite if you have any on Zorin?
Yeah, absolutely. So in this new release that we're putting out tomorrow, we actually have version 6.3.5, which was also released in the past week or two. And that's mainly designed for better support for larger organizations. So they actually recommend going one release behind to make sure that, you know, enterprise deployments are fully supported. So that's what we include in this release.
And can you imagine ever having, like, not having LibreOffice as a part of your application, what you call it, application
suite
in Zorin OS?
I mean, like, LibreOffice is so mature and so feature rich that I don't see very close competitors that are open source, especially that we can include. I think the community, the developer ecosystem, the support that's available out there, especially for organizations, is just really stellar, that it just makes sense to include LibreOffice apart from other suites.
And as I was curious, because I'm on Manjaro, as you guys were speaking there, I decided to do a quick look up. So by default, and Manjaro, so that's the Wii, apparently. So Manjaro is actually on the 6.3.5 release, and then I was curious, so I actually looked up and on the repos, the LibreOffice fresh version, and that is indeed on 6.4.1. So if you want the latest and greatest, just look up LibreOffice fresh, if you're on Manjaro or Arch and have access to the repos. And I believe there might be a LibreOffice fresh PPA if you want to add it to an Ubuntu based distribution.
To be honest, LibreOffice has been so stable and stellar for so long that I don't think there's ever been a time recently when I was like really impatiently waiting for the next release, because they anything that they do, obviously the fewer the bugs and the more features and the faster it gets, the better. But it's for years it's been really brilliant.
Speaking of LibreOffice, an announcement recently is that Collabora, which I believe are as kind of a commercial supported version of LibreOffice, and I believe they also do financial support for the Document Foundation and the LibreOffice project as well. LibreOffice is now available on iOS and Android. I have installed the Android version, but it was pretty much just a very basic blank screen with a plus in the corner, as in, do you want to add a document? I think it's mainly add an editing functionality at the moment, rather than do you want to create a brand new document? And since I didn't have any sample documents on my device to mess around with, I just said, oh, that's neat, and then didn't really do much testing with it beyond that. Have any of you guys checked it out?
I have actually. I thought, you can actually do, I've checked it out to myself very briefly as well. You can actually create a new text document, new spreadsheet, a new presentation. It's basically, you click new, you click save, and it will open it for you. Now, a spreadsheet on a phone, that's just the stuff of nightmare for me. Obviously, sometimes you just can't help it and need to. I mean, obviously there might be some people who can't help it and have to be able to do some on the fly, on the go editing of spreadsheets on their phone. I feel very sorry for those people because. By definition, spreadsheets, I think, are meant for big screens. If they need to, this is definitely a step in good direction because, it's a free and open source application. It uses open standards, open file formats, and we need more of that. I'm not sure how well it ties into the Nextcloud, how well it's integrated with things like Nextcloud. There is a huge potential for having collaborative editing, where it could really come to its own when you maybe not spreadsheets, but when you have a presentation, you can not only collaboratively create it or edit it, comment on it, but then you can take your phone to wherever you need to do the presentation. And maybe, I don't know if it's possible yet or if it's intended, but maybe you can use your phone as the device from which the presentation is presented, really. So that there's definitely future for this.
So speaking of mobile devices, there's all sorts of smooth segues in this episode today. The Unity 8 continuation that the Ubiports project have taken over, they've decided to rename Unity 8, and now it's apparently Lomiri. It's spelled Lomiri, so I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of the name. I have to say, immediately when I first read it, I thought it was Lumiri, as in Lumiri, but I had to look at it a couple of times. Now it's definitely Lomiri, so I don't know if Lumiri was taken or anything like that, or if genuinely could be the first thing that came into their mind, decided to call it Lomiri. So I suppose it's distancing themselves from the previous Ubuntu project of Unity. Who knows, they might be, because they called the operating system, mobile phone operating system, Ubuntu Touch, still currently. So they might be thinking about renaming the mobile operating system as well. Or this is now just the new name for both their mobile operating system and the Unity 8 project, and they're just renaming both the same thing, which is entirely possible. Have either of you guys actually used Ubuntu Touch or anything like that?
No, I unfortunately, during my last week travels, I realized how dependent, especially abroad, I am on Android applications. So I would love to see Ubuntu Touch, Sailfish, and all the other open source alternative operating systems for mobile devices to take off. But I would be able to try them, depending how complete the experience is. But I can't imagine completely not having Android or iOS on, when needed, because everything is an app. Having said that, though, the fact that they've taken over Ubuntu when Canonical can't the project, and the fact that they are thriving and they
Ubuntu Touch.
Ubuntu Touch, yeah, sorry, yeah. Oh, wow, okay, so, no, I didn't just announce, that Canonical can't Ubuntu. That would be a breaking news, right? Basically, when the fact that they've been going on for so long, I don't know how long it's been, it must have been a few years, like, I don't know, three years since Ubuntu Touch has gone away from Canonical, and the fact that the project is still alive well, and that Lomiri and Ubuntu Touch are being developed well, that's great. Hopefully it will one day become possible to basically just use an operating system like this, and not being dependent on the duopoly of Android and iOS.
It was actually quite interesting when you're talking about Android support, and yeah, I agree with you, because there's always that niggling thing, like my go-to examples are your WhatsApp's applications, or your banking applications, or your two-factor authentication applications that just exist solely on iOS or Android. Those are your two choices, and increasingly banks are requiring you to have their application on your phone purely for authentication, or in the case of a lot of these newfangled banks are entirely based on the application. I mean, N26 does not exist in any capacity without the application. It goes through everything. They have a web interface for it, but let's say on the web interface you say, oh, I want to transfer €100 to Mike because I'm feeling generous.
You definitely should.
Then automatically it says, oh, go pick up your phone for the authentication. I'm like, I'm here. I know all the codes in my head. Can I just not type them in? No. It has to be in your phone. I can get the idea of multi-factor, but it's annoying when it's just tied to one device, which I suppose there's a security argument both ways. One thing I will say is I do have a officially supported Sailfish device, which is an Xperia XA2. And in order to be officially supported, you pay the money. I think it's like $40 or $50 or something, one-off payment. You get official support, and they will say, we guarantee Android support. And I think it's Android 8 support. So as long as somebody publishes an Android application and it supports the Android 8 SDK, then it will work on the Sailfish officially supported Sailfish devices. There's community ports. I mean, there's a community port of Sailfish OS for my phone, which is the OnePlus 5T. But immediately in the frequently asked questions, it says, is there Android support? And they say, no, because this is a community port, which is unfortunate, because if they had that, then straight away I'd be wiping Android and putting Sailfish OS on this device if it had Android support. Anyway, that was a rant and a half, but do any of you guys have any thoughts on the whole Android ecosystem, or in relation to free and open source mobile operating systems?
Yeah, so actually I'm not sure if you've heard about a project called Anbox.
I have, yeah.
Where they're containerizing Android apps for use on the Linux desktop. It's kind of quietly been chugging away for a few years, but there was an interesting announcement, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, by Canonical, where they were pitching it towards their cloud customers, but one thing that they were doing was using Anbox to containerize games, like Android games, so that you can actually launch a gaming streaming service for Android apps. I don't know if anyone's actually doing this at the moment, but it seems like a really cool use case. And perhaps if Anbox has developed to such a state where it actually is possible to run games, not only just Android apps, inside of Linux, it could be an interesting scenario if, say, Android app developers might be able to package their apps using, say, Snap or Flatpak, using Anbox inside the runtime in order to distribute their Android apps within Linux and make it appear like it's a native Linux app. I don't know if anyone's doing this at the moment, but it's something that could be interesting to look at.
So I think that's the end of the news. So that brings us to our main segment, which is you, Artyom. So it's you. The Zorna West project. So how did you get started with the Zorna West project? How did you think that, you know what, we can do this ourselves? When I say we, because I know it's not just yourself. So how did you, plural, get started off with the Zorna West project?
Yes, so rewind back to the summer of 2008, and my brother and I, we first installed Linux onto our computer for the first time. It was Ubuntu 7.10, I think. Brings you way back, yeah. We kind of were just interested in customizing our computer and seeing what cool software is out there, and we just came across some videos of the Compiz Cube. Do you guys remember that?
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, we thought that was really cool back then.
Everybody wanted one, yeah. And I, you know, wobbly windows on a cube with gears inside, and those were the days, man.
The windows burned down as well.
Yeah.
If you want to, yeah, it's crazy.
Obviously, I don't mean to interrupt, but Artyom will give you a little Easter egg here. I still have my CD of my first Linux distribution, which was...
No way.
wow. 606 Kubuntu. LTS Kubuntu.
Okay, you beat me. You beat me there. Yeah, so back then, like, I was 12 and my brother was 14. So, you know, we found all that Compiz stuff very cool. But when we actually started using Linux on our computer, we saw the many other advantages that it has. You know, that it was way faster, it was way more secure, it doesn't really get viruses, really customizable, of course. And we kind of just thought to ourselves, you know, this is really cool and most people haven't even heard of this. What if we could make it more accessible to the general public? Because when we first showed Linux to our dad, who was just a regular computer user, who was using Windows, he found it a bit jarring, even just for the fact that the interface doesn't resemble what he's used to. So, you know, you don't have the start menu, the taskbar that you would have in Windows, and that would be enough of a hindrance for a huge segment of the population, we found, to not even be interested in something different from what they're familiar with. So we kind of thought to ourselves, if we can make the user interface more familiar, it could potentially open up the advantages of Linux to the general public. And also at the same time, we were thinking about doing a project for the Young Scientist competition. Do you guys know that?
I was in it, didn't win anything, but I was in it.
Oh, really cool. Yeah, we were in it. We didn't win the whole competition and whatnot, like, of course, but it was a really good jumping point to start thinking about this project, not just as a hobby, but also something that could be useful generally in the world, because we got a lot of interest from, you know, passers-by, even the judges as well. That made us really think that, hey, we should take this on as something, as a long-term project, and so we've been working on it ever since.
So that kind of brings me into the next question. Who would you say Zorn is aimed at? So what kind of user are you aiming at? I get the hint from your background there that your background leading up to Zorn OS is that you're kind of going for the grassroots, maybe the person who's not in the tech industry. It wouldn't be a particularly technical person and just wants their computer to be stable and just to work. Would that be a correct summarization?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's our number one use case that we're always thinking about, to make it really accessible for pretty much anyone to use Linux. But we also see a lot of interest from people who have been using Linux for even 10 years, and they were saying, like, I was distro hopping for all these years, and then I came across Zornos and it really clicked with me, and I've been using it for a lot longer than other distributions. So, like, our philosophy is generally about making an operating system that's general purpose and that's stable and usable by as many people as possible, and just generally providing a really good user experience and design on the desktop.
What are the kind of philosophies that you apply to achieve that? Like, I mean, design philosophies, what to include, what not to include, customizability versus elegance or style, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so we don't have like very rigid philosophies and kind of points that we think about when making customizations or changes, but we always think about who are our users, who are we trying to target, and whether this change that we're proposing makes sense. So essentially, every time we think about, say, including a new application, we run through it and make sure, is this something that is intuitive? Is this something that any user can figure out how to use in 5 seconds, that they don't have to learn any jargon or how to do something entirely new and different? But at the same time, giving them a feature set that's a lot more rich than, say, Windows and Mac, giving them the power to do a lot more and customize more about the desktop, which is something that Linux is inherently great, but also just making it super familiar and intuitive and not intimidating. Because there are a lot of Linux projects that are kind of aimed more at advanced users, and they do a really great job at that. But some of the decisions that are made, what kind of software to include, how to design it, isn't really aimed and super friendly for, say, a grandma who's been using Windows for 10 years and just wants to browse the web.
I click on the internet and I get my email. that kind of...
Exactly.
I was just thinking that probably the... It might have been the first time that I ever heard of Zorin OS, but if it wasn't the very first time, I think it was the very first time that I saw a kind of an in-depth demonstration of it, even though it was a kind of a very humorous take on it. It was actually Crazy Ken's Computer Adventures. I don't know if you're aware of that channel, but I think he's done a fair few takes on Zorin OS, kind of following you along the... he'll always get the latest version and say, oh, well, what's new in Zorin OS? And can I run it on this? Can I run it on a Mac Mini or whatever? And I think the very first video I saw of it is him running Zorin OS on a Mac Mini. So, and I was like, that's actually quite interesting. And it's you have a very unique aesthetic, and it's something that is well designed, and there's little niceties here there. I mean, the whole thing of your default landing page for Google is just a massive Google when you just kind of search, you could have changed that in the meantime. I don't know if you have or not, but I remember that's one of my abiding memories of you just have a nice kind of loading page in the web browser once you get started up. So it's a very kind of nice aesthetic and it's very accessible. I would say maybe one of my questions would be, would you have a computer that you would be aiming for? Would it be a lower end PC or just your average PC?
So like we have a large number of users with all sorts of different needs and computers that they're using it on. And we want to make it accessible to as many different kinds of hardware out there. So by default, you know, the Zorin OS Core and Ultimate Editions, they use the GNOME desktop environment, which has a really rich feature set, especially for newer computers, say touch-based computers. But at the same time, we find that a lot of people are interested in taking their old hardware and repurposing it, say, maybe as a hand-me-down or even just to use themselves, because, say, that computer might be a Windows XP machine and you can't really use Windows XP anymore because it lost support. But great thing about Linux is it's pretty lightweight. So we've created the light edition of Zorin OS, which uses the XFCE desktop environment.
Very good desktop environment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we try to make it as... well designed and accessible as our ordinary GNOME editions. But also really lightweight so that it runs on that hardware and is really tailored towards, you know, old and low spec computers. So we try to target as many different kind of hardware setups as we can, general purpose ones.
So when you're saying that leads me on to one of the next questions we have for you is, if you're aiming for kind of with your Zorin OS Lite, aiming for maybe older computers or something that has less system resources, would you be ever consider an ARM version, like on the Pinebook Pro or something like that?
Yeah, no, the developments around the ARM-based hardware ecosystem have been really interesting over the past couple years, and things are really heating up towards making it, making these kinds of single-board computers, say, for example, Raspberry Pi and Pinebooks, like really powerful enough for you to be able to use it as a general purpose computer. So that is something that we're looking at right now. Don't really have anything to announce just yet. We're not actively working on it just yet, but it's something that we would like to support, you know, in the coming releases.
And would that be something that you would be able to collaborate with upstream or get some of the lessons that have been learned from people tinkering upstream? By that I mean there's Ubuntu Mate running on the Raspberry Pi, so that having an Ubuntu base and you guys having an Ubuntu base, maybe there could be some collaboration there upstream or something like that.
Yeah, potentially down the line. It's something that we're not actively focused on just yet, but is something that we would like to focus on more in the near future, hopefully.
You sell hardware yourself, don't? Or you have a hardware partnership with at least two companies, don't you? On your website, I think.
Yeah. So Star Labs as well as Nova Custom in the Netherlands. They're our first two hardware partners, and we're working with a couple others at the moment to try to bring out some new Linux-based, Zorin-OS-based computers.
Awesome. You mentioned new releases there. You are going to have a release tomorrow, a point release, don't you? Just great that you found the time to be here rather than fretting about the last pre-release things. So what can people expect in Zorin OS 5... Sorry, what can people expect in Zorin OS 15.2?
Yeah, so we're mainly focusing on making it more accessible to new hardware configurations, say, for example, newer AMD GPUs as well as Intel processors. So making it work just as good on newer PCs as it does on older PCs, as well as just including newer versions of software, say, for example, LibreOffice or GIMP, so that people can work and create a lot better than they could before.
How does it work on Zorin? If, for example, you release tomorrow, people who are on Zorin OS 15.1, they just get a notification and they will click and it will update, or is it a more involved process?
Yeah, so they just open up the software updater, install the latest updates, and well, they're running 15.2.
One of the interesting, and this is completely from a different corner, one of the interesting things here in the press release that you are going to issue, that you'll kindly see today, you say that since you released Zorin OS 15 9 months ago, you've had 900,000 downloads. I think that's the first time I've had a Linux distribution, or maybe not, but it's not very common people give, or that Linux distributions give these kind of numbers. Do you have a kind of idea how many of these downloads were more stable and how many of them were somebody was trying in a virtual box kind of thing?
We don't really keep track of what kind of installation people have. It's just purely the download figures and the user numbers. So I can't really give any figures about who's using on what kind of computer. We just don't collect that kind of data.
And would it be any kind of unique IP tracking or anything like that? I don't mean tracking in that sense, but as in, if one person downloaded the ISO image 10 times from the same PC or something, would that skew your stats?
No, well, we don't really keep track of IPs either. So essentially, we just delete all of the IP addresses off our server as soon as they come in. you know, for privacy reasons. So the 900,000 figure could be more, could be less. Some people even download it on one computer and then share the USB with other people. Say, for example, in an organization, if they're rolling out ZorNOS, they would only have it downloaded a couple of times to a couple of USBs and installed on each computer. So those figures aren't 100% representative of how big the user base is.
One reason how I find ZorNOS quite fascinating is that you and your brother built a business around this. Am I right in assuming that you make a living? This is your 9-to-5, isn't it?
Yeah. It's our full-time job, and we're super thankful for all the people who have contributed and donated over the years. We wouldn't have been able to get to where we are right now without that kind of support. So huge thank you to everyone.
Yeah, it's interesting because you are neither a purely open source voluntary project, nor are you a Red Hat kind of institution. Do you have like a end game, or I don't want to say business plan, but somewhere where you would like to be, let's say in 10-15 years as a business? Would you like to, I don't know, power 40% of Irish education system or something like that?
Yeah, so like, especially in the coming months and years, our focus is starting to switch over towards helping organizations, businesses, governments as well, make the switch over to ZorNOS and Linux at large. So last month, we actually announced that we're going to be launching a new product called Zorin Grid in the summer. And what that is it's a management tool that connects to all the computers in your organization. If they're running ZorNOS, or later on down the line, we're going to be supporting other Linux distributions, it'll connect to all the computers in your organization and make it really simple for, you know, the IT technicians and admins to manage all of them. So essentially, the goal will be to make it as easy to manage thousands of computers as it is to manage one. So they'll have a dashboard that allows them to, say, install new apps, roll out software updates, you know, change security settings across their whole fleet of computers. And we think that with that kind of a tool, it will be a lot more accessible for lots of new organizations to make the switch from Windows to Linux. So that is our goal for the next couple months and years.
I can definitely see from a support point of view that that's immensely powerful and immensely compelling. Just giving an example off the top of my head, let's say if you have a computer lab of 20 computers, and you could just see from the metrics and go, there's a process that's spiking the CPU on PC 15, I'll just remotely kill that process and something like that. It's just it's great to have that broad overview and from a support mm-hmm. point of view.
Would you say that currently most of your customers or users are institutions or individuals?
Yeah, at the moment, the only paid for product that we have is the Ultimate Edition, which is more aimed at individual users. And say when an organization or a business approaches us saying, you know, we'd like to introduce ZorNOS on our computers, we actually recommend them the Core Edition because that's actually better suited than the Ultimate Edition, because, say, Ultimate includes a bunch of games, which is great for home users. But honestly, the feature set that you'd have in a free version of ZorNOS, as well as other Linux distributions, is pretty much sufficient for organizational use. And with this new Zorin Grid tool, we're hoping to charge per computer per month managed for this service to help finance, you know, the development of ZorNOS as well as upstream Linux projects further.
Would you ever consider making your customizations of GNOME a Zorin desktop environment? Like, could there be a Manjaro Zorin edition or something, or which are customizations of GNOME?
Actually, around like 5 years ago, we did have our own custom desktop environment with some GTK and other components baked in. But we actually decided to make the switch over to a pure GNOME shell based desktop, and that makes it a lot easier for us to take advantage of all of the new features that are coming out upstream. So I think it only really makes sense to work on the customizations and, say, GNOME Shell extensions on top of the core GNOME desktop, so that there's no wasted effort, no reinventing the wheel happening. And that essentially has been the philosophy that has led us to where we are today. Because if we were to continue doing our own desktop environment, that would detract focus away from new features rather than having to reinvent the wheel with existing features.
Just to clarify, it's not just pure GNOME shells. It's very heavily customized on your side. I'd imagine there's a lot of work that goes in it, because you offer, at least in the core version, you have like two different layouts, I think, or two different...
Yeah, three layouts.
And
you have your own menu as well, and there's quite a few customizations.
It can look quite familiar to both, depending on the layout. It can look quite familiar to people who use GNOME or to people who use macOS, but also to people who like that Windows 7 kind of thing with the start menu in the corner. Clarify that, is it difficult or basically, I always had that kind of stereotype is going around that GNOME is very difficult to customize for both developers and individuals. Why did you choose GNOME? What advantages it had over, say, Qt or other toolkits?
Yeah, so I think especially in the past 5 years or so, GNOME has a very noticeable focus towards design and user interface architecture that I think really clicked with us. Their apps have become a lot more intuitive, especially for new users, as well as for enabling newer form factors. For example, you know, touch-based devices. You know, you get a lot of laptops that are convertible nowadays, as well as some tablets. And we thought that the developer ecosystem as well around GNOME was pretty strong. And if we wanted to support all of the latest, you know, features and hardware devices that, you know, are being released every few years, we thought that GNOME was definitely the best option, taking all that into account. Now, actually making GNOME ready for ZornOS back when we were making the transition, it was quite challenging to support all of the, you know, user interface enhancements that we've always been shipping with since day one. Say, for example, having the start menu, the taskbar. When we decided to make the switch over, those extensions did not exist. So we had to develop them nearly from scratch. Essentially, the biggest challenges were especially about documentation of how to make GNOME Shell extensions. There wasn't an awful lot of that. So essentially we had to look through the source code of GNOME many times in order to figure out, oh, that's how you know, make this menu or make an app icon show up this way. But ever since we released ZornOS 12, which was the first one that had GNOME Shell, people really, like the developer ecosystem really clicked around those extensions that we developed. Say, for example, the taskbar and the start menu. There have been a couple forks of our extensions that have actually been developed further, and we end up rebasing our extensions on those newer versions. So it's kind of a cyclical relationship. And I thought it was really fresh and new to us, and we thought that was really powerful, showing how good the developer ecosystem around GNOME Shell is. That, you know, there's lots of extension developers that are supporting all sorts of different new ways of how to use GNOME, and we thought that was really cool.
The arc menu is based off your menu, isn't it?
Yeah. Same with dash to panel for the taskbar.
That's really quite cool. Just when you're talking about the fact that you in the very early days you were customizing GNOME Shell to suit your needs. I remember installing it as it was happening, in other words, seeing the progression. I remember the very early days of Linux Mint switching over from GNOME 2 over to Cinnamon, which is what they maintain at the moment, and they had their own journey. They had their own customizations of GNOME Shell in the very early days, and I think they decided to go in the opposite direction of you, where you decided to not make your own desktop environment. They decided, screw this, and throw the baby out with the pram water and go, screw it, we're starting from scratch, we're going to make our own desktop environment. And is Cinnamon, which I'm actually really enjoying, because I'm on Manjaro Cinnamon at the moment. But different philosophies, but fair play to you for continuing to stick with GNOME. And I can see that it definitely does free up resources rather than maintaining your own desktop environment. I mean, it's another project that did something very similar, of course, is Ubuntu, going from Unity, their own desktop environment, to rebasing on GNOME. And now they're lightly customizing GNOME for their own needs, nowhere near to the extent that you guys are, but they're doing something very similar. They've done something very similar of deciding to base on GNOME, and therefore free up resources that it can go into other parts of the organization.
Mm-hmm. If you weren't, if you didn't have your own Linux distribution with its own heavily customized GNOME, what would you be using?
You know, I haven't really thought of that, but probably just plain Ubuntu, to be quite honest. It's the first distro that I used. It's they have a pretty good focus towards design as well. Say, for example, the GNOME Shell extensions that they do ship with, it makes a lot of sense for them to be there, as well as the support that's available, you know, the huge community that's out there. For a desktop that you just want to set and go with, I guess Ubuntu is a pretty good choice, if Zornos didn't exist.
Have you ever had a look at PopOS? But PopOS is a very interesting take on GNOME Shell.
Yeah, no, they're doing a really good job there. Like, we've been taking a look at some of the enhancements that they've been doing. And, you know, it's a really cool and fresh take on an Ubuntu-based distribution. And the enhancements that they've made, especially around gaming and graphics, have been pretty influential across the whole of the Linux ecosystem. And it has affected some of the work that we've done towards supporting, say, Lutris and Steam, so that they just work out of the box. And huge kudos to System76 for making those enhancements.
They are introducing tiling, like advanced tiling, into their you know, version of GNOME Shell, into PopOS, which is that's obviously aimed at a very specific set of users. Do your users use the desktop in that kind of a way that you do? Do you need to, you know, do you have to maintain documentation about keyboard shortcuts, and do you have this kind of advanced users, or are your users more I don't want to say most kind of people, but most kind of people?
Yeah, so I mean, like, we do have quite a wide range of users with different levels of experience. Most of them that we tend to see are just people who want to use the computer as they normally would, say, if they were using Windows or Mac. So nothing too advanced. But then again, Zornos just uses GNOME Shell, so whatever enhancements that the PopOS team or any other GNOME Shell extension developer make, they should all be available in Zornos as well. That's one of the really good advantages of having a shared technology stack, and one of the reasons why we want to keep with GNOME Shell rather than, say, forking.
I guess what I was getting at, basically, I think the space where the space of this Linux distributions that are very heavily focusing on design is there's quite a lot of you, you know. So you have obviously Zorinos, you have PopOS, you have Deepin is very 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 design orientated, you have Elementary OS, Ubuntu of course as well. I think from the little what I've seen of latest Cinnamon, that's also very very design focused. What do you think you, or what are you kind of doing, or do you feel the need to differentiate, and if so, then how?
Yeah, especially over the past couple of years, you know, the rise of just generally a lot more developers in the Linux space and new distributions have really introduced a lot more ideas out into the space. In our case, like, we're laser focused on our main user group being people who are switching over from Windows to Linux. So say, for example, Elementary OS, they are taking a somewhat different approach. They're kind of thinking to themselves, like, what if we made a distribution, a desktop experience that, you know, makes sense without having to appeal to a specific set of users, making the switch to Linux. They have their own desktop environment that's laid out in a completely different way to ZorNOS. And I think that among the design-focused distributions, there still is quite a lot of differentiation apart from that, including who exactly you're targeting, especially over the next couple of years with the new focus on enterprises and businesses. I think there's a big opportunity, not just in making the desktop environment more user-friendly, but also making the entire experience user-friendly in the case of, say, in our Ultimate Edition, we provide technical support for people who are installing ZorNOS for the first time. And having that hand-holding there when you need it can make the difference between someone trying out Linux and, say, not having a great experience because they can't get their Wi-Fi working, and then deciding to go back to Windows because of that. And with that level of support that's there, that just helps make the switch over a lot easier and a lot more impactful, I think. So it's going beyond just the scope of the operating system itself towards out to the entire user experience. That's where we're really trying to focus.
Are you going to be then integrating PowerShell into ZorNOS? That's, I mean, I don't know how much PowerShell is actually used by Windows users, but I find it fascinating that you can actually run it on Linux and it works well. Do you get, that's a very specific question, but do you get requests for that, or do you know if your users use PowerShell on ZorNOS?
Honestly, I don't really know that much. You can actually just download PowerShell straight from the Software Center. It's included in the Snap Store, which we pre-install in ZorNOS. So essentially, you could just go into the Software Store, type in PowerShell, click Install, and you have it. So what the Snap team have been doing is pretty powerful. And I think the fact that they're curating these apps and helping, say, even Microsoft make apps delivered to Linux, I think that's a huge game changer, yeah.
So that was a pretty example how a stupid question can lead to much more interesting question. You had Snaps. What other solutions for packaging software do you support in ZorNOS?
Yeah, so we support Snaps, of course, apt and .deb packages, since we are based on Ubuntu and therefore Debian. But also we pre-include support for Flatpak repositories in ZorNOS. We don't have any of them enabled just yet, but it's something that is very simple to add. Say if you want to add FlatHub, you go onto their website, you download the Flatpak ref file, you just double click, it opens the software store, and you're able to add it straight to the desktop in a graphical way.
Just as you were, I was just thinking there, but since you were speaking about Elementary OS's approach to things, and now we're talking about kind of software stores, have you ever considered the Elementary OS pay what you want style store, where they're kind of going off in that direction? Have you considered that as a potential revenue stream?
Yeah, no, it's something that could be quite interesting, especially for supporting app developers, because if you know anything, a lot of people say that, hey, I don't want to switch to Linux because the apps aren't available. That's starting to go away. More apps are becoming cross-platform, but it is important to give more app developers an incentive towards making apps for Linux. And I think that's another really great way of attracting new developers to make native Linux apps. I see that the Flatpak team upstream are doing some work towards supporting, you know, paid Flatpaks, and potentially, I think I saw supporting pay what you want. And it looks like the elementary team are collaborating with them. So I think that's something that could really strengthen the app ecosystem on Linux as a whole.
I think the elementary team actually were, if I'm not, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, people, but I think that they were recently having a sprint that was supported on Kickstarter or something that
crowdfunding anyway.
Yeah, crowdfunding anyway, to basically have the App Center anywhere on any Linux distribution. So if that took off, would you be willing to include, like, I don't want to say their App Center, would you be willing maybe to consider changing from or adding this project, like an elementary App Center, onto Zorin OS in order to facilitate payment for developers?
Yeah, it's an interesting proposition, and we're closely following what they're doing towards making App Center more accessible and more rich as an ecosystem. And yeah, we'd love to integrate that when it makes sense. Absolutely.
Speaking of Pop OS earlier, I think the Pop Shop is a fork, a close fork of the elementary OS store as well. So,
mm-hmm. I think I saw on their crowdfunding campaign, like, they're not saying specifically trying to get other Linux distros to have the App Center software, you know, baked in, but rather supporting their own Flatpak repository and features that they're developing that are inside of their own App Center across other App Centers, say, for example, GNOME software, which is what we include in Zorin OS by default.
So it's more of a...
It's more of a wide project. At least that's what I think it looks like. I need to take a much closer look at that.
Yeah, it's needless to say, because the sprint was either quite recent or is ongoing. I don't know what the timeline of it is, that the details are yet to come out. So it's don't worry, we're not putting you on the spot that much that you were expecting, like, have the answers now.
No, I think their crowdfunding campaign's still going on. They're just about finishing it up. So, you know, listeners, take a look and contribute if you wish to make the Linux app ecosystem more vibrant.
I think one of their stretch goals is they have doubled the their initial asking, and they say if they reach that stretch goal, then they'll do another sprint later on. So if they double their stretch goal, essentially you get two sprints. It has to be mentioned that Zorin OS and yourself is based in this fair city of ours, old Dublin. Do you find the strong tech industry here to be an advantage?
I think the tech community around here really does expand our way of thinking beyond just, say, for example, a Linux-based project, but thinking how to make, you know, Zorin OS and Linux more accessible towards all sorts of different users, including tech companies. And the mentality that they have around, you know, building an organization that's sustainable, that's, you know, self-funding, I think is something that, you know, we have adapted from the tech ecosystem here. So we're not a pure play open source community project, but we're also not a pure play for-profit only business. I think, you know, the cross-pollination of ideas that the community here has really does influence our thinking and just widens our scope of, you know, who are we trying to target the most? What are our goals essentially for Zorin OS and our company?
Would you, I don't know if you've done this in the past, but would you ever consider, like, almost having a showcase booth at a conference or something like that, or Dublin Makers, kind of that kind of makery, tinkery kind of audience. Would you ever consider having that kind of a presence in the local community?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, at the moment, we're just a very small team. Two of us on the core team, as well as a couple of freelance developers. But we are hoping to expand the team and, you know, have a bit more of an impact on the ecosystem here and the community here. So, yeah, it's something that would be exciting.
Well, I think that you've eventually exhausted all of our questions. Mike, I don't know if you have any more.
Is there anything you'd like to ask us, Zorin? I keep calling you Zorin. That's awful. It's because of the...
Mr. Zorin.
Mr. Zorin, yeah. Is there anything you'd like to ask us, Mr. Zorin?
Off the top of my head, not really. But like, I guess, in your upcoming events that you're having here in Dublin, I see you've been kind of focused more on, you know, having new kind of... one-off events as well as the community meetups. What made you think about making that kind of switch over?
So you're basically referring to the Dublin Linux community events where all three of us are organizers, as well as you know, two other people, Camilla and Dudley. Well, basically, we still focus on the meetups, on the two meetups every month, one in a pub, one in a more you know, computer friendly, alcohol free environment. And but we think that I mean, that's what I think about it. Connor might have a completely different idea. You know, new events, new kind of events, helping to get out there outside the scope of a meetup, maybe show some you know, to explore what other people want to know and see, and what other people want to know about Linux, and how to show them the good of Linux, and how to introduce it to them. That's interesting. And you know, some things you just can't do in a meetup. Some things like talks are definitely a one-off thing. So if you want to, I just had an idea. This can get deleted. But if you ever wanted to have a talk on how to if you ever wanted to submit a talk, for example, on how to make your own Linux distribution or run a Linux-based business, that would definitely be interesting, at least to me.
Yeah, certainly.
But back to the main thread in my head. Yeah, basically, we try to do new things because, you know, we have passion for Linux, all of us, and open source, and it's important for us to, at least for me again, to work with that and to show it to other people and to create a bigger and richer community.
I would like to echo some of Mike's points here. So my primary motivation is to have regular meetups, so they're dependable. So it's predictable. If you can say, oh, I'm not going to make that one, oh, there's going to be one soon after that, or it's predictable. So that's the reason why there's two regular meetups. One is in a pub, and one is in a kind of a coffee environment. More than for the sake that those two tend to attract different types of crowds. You're free to attend both if you want to. But yeah, it's the grassroots. My motivations are definitely grassroots. I would absolutely love if somebody came in off the street and said, I have no idea, what is this Linux thing? I have no idea what it is. I would say, oh, it's another operating system like your Windows, like your Mac, and that you may be familiar with. And this is a free operating system. And then go on that explanation path. And that, I find that to be very motivating, very empowering, just to introduce somebody to a concept that they've never been introduced to before. But I completely understand that the Linux community and the Linux ecosystem also has a lot of very technical people. So they use Linux in their day-to-day, their sysadmins, they are managing servers, that is their day-to-day, so they're running a Linux server or interacting with a Linux server as part of their day-to-day job. So there's a spectrum there, and it's important to get the balance between the two, because if you exclusively aim for one, then you end up alienating the other. If you're aiming for the very technical people, the 20-year veteran sysadmins and so on and so forth, you'll end up isolating people. You'll probably end up isolating me, because I do not have that level of knowledge, nor at the moment would an in-depth talk in that direction actually would interest me, because that is just currently in my career path. I just do not have that interest, or do not have the knowledge in order to be able to discern that information that will be coming in my direction. Then, of course, if you aim for the complete newbie, the Linux newbie, you'll end up isolating the people who are coming along saying, I use Linux day-to-day. Is this community going to be accommodating to me as well? So it's important to find the balance between the two. So primarily the motivation for the regular meetups is the social aspect. Is people just hanging out, shooting the breeze, and gradually, bit by bit, it's going to be a long process. I've no illusions of it happening quickly, but gradually, bit by bit, you start to get regulars, and they start to hang out we have a Telegram chat, start to hang out in the Telegram chat, and then you get to build up that kind of community yourself, the camaraderie, the people helping each other out, and when they've those kind of questions as they come up. And the one-off events are unfortunately one-off. I would like to have them more regularly, but as you grow as an organization, you have to start somewhere. So the one-off events that you mentioned, like we had one in the past where we invited an Intel engineer to talk about Clear Linux, and we have one coming up in the future that is Lightning Talks. So we're inviting community members to submit Lightning Talks ideas, and also there'll be some Microsoft engineers there as well. So that is the integration between and the merger and contrast between ordinary Joe Shopes off the street who want to give, I said, oh, I want to do a talk. Okay, yep. There's your platform. You can give a talk if you have the idea and if you want to do it. And also, there'll be people from industry there. There'll be a guy from Microsoft talk about PowerShell, or talk about Windows Subsystem for Linux, or talking about Azure or whatever they want to do. So there's, and then you all get to hang out in the pub afterwards, and you might get to ask some questions informally to one of those Microsoft engineers. That's all the mingling and merging of ideas, and so that's my motivation for it. Anyway, so we have a couple of shout outs. My shout out is Ba'u. It's formerly called F Pac-Man, and is a graphical interface for managing your Linux applications / packages. It is able to manage AOR, AppImage, Flatpak, Snap, and native web applications. And we will include the GitHub page in the show notes. And looking through there's some GIFs of the interaction with the user interface, and it actually looks to be quite interesting. Some of the very bright colors may not be to my taste, but I'm sure there'll be maybe you might be able to theme it later on and change the theme, but the core functionality of the app certainly looks very good, and it's tangentially leads into our previous conversation about all different things like snaps and flatpaks and so on, so forth. So it's an interesting front end for all of your packaging needs.
Yeah, my shout out is NCDU, which is basically a disk usage analyzer for the command line. It's an amazing NCursus program that basically shows you what is taking up all the space on your disk and lets you delete it. Obviously, a link is also going to be in the show notes. We also have an event to promote, Connor.
Yes, indeed. We do have an event to shout out. So we should be at Fast Talk Live 2020. I've not yet booked my flights and accommodation. Sorry, Joe. But we should be there. Ensuring that all that goes ahead, that the hotel doesn't burn down or anything like that. And it's in the 20th of June 2020 in the Harrison in King's Cross in London. So, and it's really interesting. It's really fun to when you're there. It's in a basement in the pub, and you get to hang out with a lot of cool Linux community people.
It's we've been a few times, and it's amazing. Talk about our socials. Artyom, any socials for you or for ZorinOS? Anything to...
Yeah, so on Twitter, we're at ZorinOS. We're also on Facebook, if you use Facebook. Don't really do an awful lot of socials on the internet, though. But yeah, give it a look.
What do your user... Or do you have, like, a community of users that would... Like, online community of users? You know, some projects are more active on Reddit, some are on more Telegram, some are on IRC. Do you have, like... bias towards one of those, or maybe the...
Yeah, actually, we have a forum that is not only just for help, but we have a lot of community members just talking about what interests them. So take a look at it on our ZorinOS community forum.
All right, so link is going to be in the show notes. Obviously, our socials, as Shane started to put it, are just there as well. If you want to see them briefly, it's Linux at Linux Lads on Telegram, on Twitter, Linux Lads channel, or linuxlads.com/telegram for Telegram. We are also on Mastodon. If you look for Linux Lads, you'll find us. You can email show@linuxlads.com, that's pretty much it. There's definitely a Facebook page, but there's just that meme of Tumbleweed going around. Not much life in there. You can support us at linuxlads.com/beer or linuxlads.com/support or linuxlads.com/donate. I think those are just aliases for the same website. And that's it.
Throw us some money for a coffee or help us with things like web hosting and things like that. So donations are very much appreciated.
Yeah. And with that, this is the end of today's episode. I've been Mike.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Artyom.
Bye.
Bye.
See you.